Extremist violence in the Sahel is trickling down to West Africa's coastal countries. The battlefields between terrorists and state forces are expanding towards the Gulf of Guinea. Attacks are taking place in Benin, Ghana, Ivory Coast, and Togo. Hello, welcome to the Crisis Room. My name is Hawa Shafi Nuhu. I am your host for today. In this podcast, we look at crisis trends across the country and answer the tough questions around them. This week, I am here with my colleague, Kunle Adebajo, who is also the investigations editor at Human Angle. Today, we will be discussing whether or not and why extremist violence might be trickling down to West Africa's coastal countries. Hello, Kunle. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Hi, Hawa. It's good to be here.
So, Kunle, you recently wrote an article for Human Angle that says that extremist violence in the Sahel is finding its way to some countries in West Africa's coastal side. Could you tell us a bit more about that? Why is this happening? Why is extremist violence expanding towards these parts of the continent?
Why is simple. Countries have borders that separate them, but sometimes terrorists do not recognize those borders. All they just see is expanses of land that could be occupied for their own gains. And a lot of these incidents actually start locally. We see how the Boko Haram crisis started locally in Nigeria, and then we see splinter factions coming up, but then eventually they become internationalized, especially when these groups, which may first start as rebel groups, you know, revolting against the government of the day, for example, but then they are capitalizing on grievances, and then international jihadists or extremist organizations then see opportunities to form alliances with these groups. And so you find that their ambitions become bigger gradually, and they start recruiting across the borders, they start conducting attacks across the borders. And so we see that trend taking place in West Africa, Africa of recent. The extremist violence that started in that region could be traced back to 2009 with the rise of Boko Haram in Nigeria. And then in 2012, the boiling grievances and crises in Mali also reached boiling point, with rebel groups occupying the northern region of the country and ousting government forces. That was especially aggravated because of, you know, what happened in Libya with the ouster of Muammar Gaddafi, and the fact that a lot of weapons and arms proliferated in that region. It escalated crisis in several places, including in northern Nigeria. But now we are seeing that violence spreading beyond. So number one, it first spread beyond Mali and went to Burkina Faso. And now we are seeing it moving even beyond Burkina Faso and coming downwards towards the Gulf of Guinea. And the reports that I wrote focused on four countries: Togo, Benin Republic, Ghana, and Cote d'Ivoire. And so those countries have been historically peaceful, but I mean relatively peaceful, but now they are also seeing cases of jihadist violence. The first incident was in Cote d'Ivoire back in 2016, but now we are seeing more regular incidents. Ghana too had recorded its first extremist attack earlier this year in February. And so it's become, if we don't pay attention to that trend now, it means it could, just the same way we've seen in the past, where the government is like, hey, it's just one or two attacks, and then they don't take proactive measures. So it's really important that we start drawing attention to that trend before it gets beyond our control, basically. Because it also means that these terror factions and organizations are building their resources, they are building their bases, they probably want access to the Atlantic Ocean and the seaports and all the advantages that come with that. And we can't afford, you know, for there to be absolute chaos in that region.
Thank you so much for such a robust response. As you spoke, I was reminded of the unraveling of the insurgency in Nigeria and across the Lake Chad region. I think it started this way. It did not start as a full-blown war. There were pointers, there were lots of opportunities for things to have been remedied, but those opportunities were not utilized as best as they could have been. I wonder, what are these countries doing to, in response to these extremist activities? Have there been any attempts at restoring order?
Yeah, so I think it was in 2017 that about five countries, the four countries that I've mentioned, together with Burkina Faso, started what is known as the Accra Initiative, which is basically a multinational project that allows them to share resources, share intelligence, so that they can collectively tackle terrorism and transnational organized crime. And so that's a huge milestone. They are also getting some support from foreign intelligence agencies. France, for example, is giving support to Francophone countries. The international police is supporting. The United States government is supporting. And locally, the countries have also putting a lot of things in place. You know, if you remember, Nigeria passed the Terrorism Prevention Act in 2014 after the Boko Haram crisis erupted. So a lot of these countries have started passing laws and creating agencies that can help them to tackle the threat, especially in places like Ivory Coast. Ivory Coast too is stepping up, you know, prosecuting offenders. There was an incident in 2016, if I'm not mistaken, where a city close to the coast of Ivory Coast was attacked by terrorists who claimed to be members of Al-Qaeda in the Maghreb, Akim. And I think it was last year that the suspects who were arrested were finally sentenced to jail terms. And so that's also a way to deter future occurrences. The countries are also deploying military forces towards the border communities. There are certain national parks, forest areas that cut across different countries. And so terrorists take advantage of this to settle and create bases. And so they can launch attacks from all those places. The recent attack that took place in Uganda, too, you'd realize they took advantage of those ungoverned spaces where there are forest areas. And so the countries are also trying to deploy more military resources to these places. They are paying more attention to vulnerable and susceptible populations, like the young people who are unemployed, creating opportunities for them, improving their human development, or even targeting ethnicities that might be aggrieved, like the Fulani population, which the Benin government is doing, for example, focusing on them to improve their laws, improve their welfare, and make sure that they are less susceptible to getting recruited by the terror groups. So there's a lot of commendable projects that are ongoing. The government of Ivory Coast too created a toolkit that allows them to, you know, reorient the minds of their people, especially young people, so that they don't become mentally vulnerable to the tactics and strategies and propaganda of the terror organizations. So they are working with religious leaders, working with educational institutions, which is very commendable. So I just think if the countries rub minds and also gain experiences from, you know, countries like Nigeria and Niger Republic, who have had this to grapple with this battle for many years, they also stand to gain a lot of new insights and not repeat the old mistakes that these other countries have made.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for that insight. I'm very delighted to hear that it seems that the responses that these countries have had to this extremist violence are not only based on militarized approaches, but are also targeting human development and seeking to liaise with religious leaders. I don't think that is one thing that has been done enough, particularly in the formative years of these little pockets of insecurity. So that's really great to hear. In your report, you noted that one of the early signs that came from the Burkinabe Intelligence Services in 2019 was when it's gathered that terrorists were taking refuge in Benin, Ghana, and Togo and making calls to people in these countries. Yeah. I feel like we've seen something similar, particularly in Nigeria. Human Angle has done some reports where it says that terrorists might be seeking refuge in places like Kano in the northwestern parts of the country. Mm-hmm. it does not seem like much has been done to be able to contain that, perhaps because they haven't launched major attacks in recent times in these places. But yeah. What do you think are some of the risks of having people like that domiciled in places like Kano, even though they haven't yet begun to launch major attacks?
So it points really to the importance of intelligence. We know that members of terror organizations, even though they launch attacks in certain places, sometimes they themselves, they hide their families in some other places. And they try not to escalate the situation in those places just to keep their families safe. And then sometimes they also have places that they go for, in quotes, vacation, so just to escape from. And sometimes we have people who are aggrieved, they desert a certain faction, they move to a different location, they try to form new alliances. And that's what we see in Nigeria with the rise of Ansaru in Benin Gwari in Kaduna State, the rise of Boko Haram factions in Niger State. We know there are certain cells also in Kogi State. And so it's important to track this movement. And you can't do that unless you have a very robust intelligence infrastructure as a government in any country, for you to be able to say, hey, okay, how can we infiltrate the communications? And that's what, you know, the Burkinabe authorities were able to pick it very early, that, you know, initially they used to just communicate with people in Mali and Nigeria that already had real huge issues when it comes to insurgencies and terrorism. But then they started noticing that, hey, they've started crossing to new frontiers like Ghana and Benin and Togo, and that became a concern. So it gave these countries an opportunity to create firewalls early enough so that they are able to repress as much as possible, even slow down the incursions by these terror organizations. And so it's important that we continue to invest in intelligence. And even if attacks are not taking place in a place at a time, we need to understand how those places are connected to the places that are already conflict laden. And so it means the job of countering terrorism does not have to be reactive all the time. We should also, you know, take proactive measures.
This has been a wonderful conversation. Thank you so much, Kunle, for being with me in the studio today and for having such an insightful conversation that I am very sure our audience will find very useful. Do you have any more contributions to make?
Not really, but you know, one thing I realized very recently is during my research for that article, I read somewhere that Ghana has a reputation as being one of the most peaceful countries in Africa. And I was actually going through the Global Peace Index, and I realized, according to that ranking, the latest at least, Ghana was considered the most peaceful country in Africa. And anyone who has been to Ghana would lend credence to this, to how safe you can be when you walk the streets and so on. And to now have this same country suffering from, you know, an explosive bomb explosion incident earlier this year just is very worrisome for people paying attention to the trend of extremist violence in the region. Well, I just hope that, you know, these countries would put in as much effort as they can and also receive maximum support from the international community to be able to get back on their feet and have full assurance of the safety of lives and properties.
Thank you again so much, Kunle.
Thanks, Awa.
So today we have a question for the audience, and we would like for people to share their responses with us on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram with the hashtag #TheCrisisRoom. Following the recent school shooting in Uganda, we know that we have had something similar in Nigeria before, particularly the Bunyadi massacre of 2014, where a lot of teenage schoolboys were killed by the Boko Haram insurgent group while they were in school. Something similar seems to have happened in Uganda. And looking at Nigeria's response to the massacre in 2014, what do you think the Ugandan government can do differently to better contain the unfolding situation as regards the school shooting that just happened last week? Remember to use the hashtag #TheCrisisRoom. You can tag us in your responses on social media. You can also send your responses to info@humanangledia.com, and we will be sure to share it during the next episode. This is an episode of The Crisis Room from Human Angle. Join us in 2 weeks for another episode. The producer is Anthony Asemota. The executive producer is Ahmed Salkida. Thank you.